So, I won't get caught. She shook her head, looking sad. So many kinds of sickness this time of year. He grabbed her hand. Don't, he said urgently. What if you get the wrong... Stop it, she said fiercely. Don't even try. Ozorn and I know poxy well who they were. Well, then you don't, because one stopped the other, Aram whispered hotly. And I can handle the other one myself. I'm grown now.
Varys, Ozorn said as he walked back into the room. Leave be. What were you talking about?
Poisoning, Varys said brightly.
Oh. Let him do his own poisoning when he gets to it.
I don't see how you two can joke about such things, Aram retorted, shaking. He thought he was going to be sick.
That's because we're old enough to have developed senses of humor, Ozorn replied. Maybe you'll get one for your birthday.
Gently, he ruffled Aram's hair.
In the meantime, relax. We won't poison anyone unless you ask us to. Will we, sweetheart?
Varys sighed. Very well. But it would have been a lovely diversion from examinations. One can only remain wound up over books for so long before one has to do something wild.
Ozorn!
Lintel shouted.
My master calls,
Ozorn complained, and ran. Varys picked up Aram's hand and kissed it. Don't be angry with me, she said. I was trying to take your mind off the pain. Whether it was her suggestion and his panic, or her lips and perfume, she had certainly done that. Preet croaked for food. Varys laughed. Aren't you a jealous thing? She chided, removing a scrap of bread from her pocket. She offered it to Preet, who gobbled it. You're an even more jealous mistress than Prisca.
Prisca isn't my mistress, Aram said automatically. How absurd to be thinking of mistresses at his age. Then he added, more woefully, and she never gets jealous.
Because she knows you're too honorable to cheat on her, Varys reassured him. Though, only because she doesn't understand you're devoted to a scrawny little tree mite. She walked down the hall as Preet screeched at her. I said tree mite, and I meant it, she called back over her shoulder.
She's the most amazing girl,
Aram murmured, picking Preet up on a finger so he could stroke her. The little bird preened. Lintel returned from his office.
I've sent a runner for a healing mage, he told Aram. I take it you don't want to rouse questions from your teachers with that eye.
Nausea welled up from Aram's belly. He had to wait to swallow and wait again, as Lintel watched with concern. When he tried to speak, the master held up a hand and disappeared into the small kitchen down the hall. When he returned, he bore a cup of tea.
Ginger, cinnamon, lemon, spearmint,
he told Aram, handing the cup to him.
It will soothe both your nausea and the aches from your eye and belly.
Aram drank in tiny sips until the liquid was cooler, then in gulps.
It's very good, he said when he finished it.
Lindhall nodded.
I think you'll find your head and belly to be far better in the morning. In the meantime, you may undertake the studies you can manage out here, with your friends if they are willing. When you are ready to sleep, I'll have one of the students manage Preet.
Aram felt he should protest all this trouble being taken on his behalf, but he was rather sleepy, too much so to protest. He nodded off in the chair, waking only briefly when Ozorn returned to gather Preet. A blanket was placed over him at some point. He remembered nothing until the musical sound told him that it was an hour before dawn. All the next day, in the classes they shared and when they met between classes, Ozorn complained. It was always the same thing. He didn't understand how Aram survived each day without collapse
if he woke frequently in the night to feed a tiny feathered tyrant. Ozorn informed them he could hardly stay awake. By the time they sat down for supper, his sorrow made Aram laugh so hard that tears came to his eyes. It was there that Diop found them. Laman was nowhere in sight.
"What did you do? Bribe someone?" he demanded hotly.
Faris looked up at him and frowned.
"Goddess, bless me. Who bit you today?"
"Never you mind," he snapped at her.
That brought both Aram and Ozorn to their feet. Faris exhaled.
"Boys, I am perfectly capable of taking care of myself. Diop, for all your bragging about your splendid family, you are a guttersnipe," Faris said. "My apologies to guttersnipes."
Diop glared at her, then demanded of Ozorn,
"Well, how did you do it? Who did you bribe?"
Ozorn gently brushed off the front of Diop's robe until the older youth knocked his hand away.
"I have no idea what you're ranting about,"
Ozorn murmured.
"No idea, he says,"
Diop told everyone at the tables around them. The other students were doing a bad job of pretending not to eavesdrop.
"No idea of a clutch of oafs coming into our quarters without permission, packing up the leftover prince and his bum boy here, leaving things all over the floor. No idea? You're to be lodged with the masters, they said. You, no more than first years in the upper academy, and not even legitimate first years at that.
Who did your sainted mother bribe, Prince Ozorn? Or did..."
Using a move Varys had taught him, Aram got Diop's hand in his and shoved it up against the older boy's wrist. Diop gasped. He seemed not to have known how painful a wrist could be when bent into a U.
"Walk," Aram whispered to Diop. "Let's walk to the door before the proctors get here."
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Varys and Ozorn rise to intercept the proctors.
"Don't call out," Aram cautioned, "or I might get excited and break something."
With all of his digging and juggling, his hands had gotten broad and strong. He might not have been able to trade punches with Diop, but his grip kept the older youth's attention. Holding Diop's hand in both of his, he steered his former roommate toward the nearest exit from the dining hall. When Diop opened his mouth to speak or shout, Aram pried the captive little finger away from the others, bending it backward. Diop gasped.
"You can choose which you'll have broken," Aram suggested.
"Your wrist or your little finger. Right before examinations, too. The little finger would heal faster, of course, but all broken bones hurt for a time after they're healed. Did you know that?"
He deposited Diop outside the hall and waited to see what would happen next. The older boy rubbed his freed hand, his mouth quivering.
"This isn't over,"
he threatened, like a villain in one of the old stories Aram loved to read. Perhaps it was the knowledge that a god owed him a favor. Perhaps it was simply that he'd had enough. Aram didn't know what caused him to shrug and say,
"Do your best, if you think it's useful. If I were you, though, I'd concentrate on my marks. From what I've been hearing, you'll be lucky if you don't have to retake half of your courses."
He turned and walked back into the dining hall. That day, and throughout examinations and the midwinter festivities, Ozorn lived with all of their belongings in a spare room of the suite shared by Lindhall's runners. He took it in good part, to Aram's relief. The truth was that the normally proud prince was so happy to be a part of Lindhall's large staff that he could have joined Aram on a pallet in the workroom and still have been happy. Aram was simply glad not to be forced to deal with the two older boys anymore. With examinations over, it was the best midwinter Aram had celebrated yet. A large mahogany chest, ornamented all over in intricate carvings, was given to him by Master Cosmas the day before the holiday began. It had come all the way from the Yamani Islands by way of Aram's family in Tira. It was a perfect mage's piece, filled with boxes of different sizes that fitted together perfectly inside. Aram quickly learned that such boxes could be switched around to use more room or less and leave space for other things. The chest was from his father, who now studied silk weaving in the Yamani Islands. The rest of his family had placed smaller gifts in each box to let him know they remembered him. There were gifts that made him happy from his masters and from Varys and Ozorn. He had done the same for Varys and Ozorn, he thought. But when he gave Prisca a book on the great queens of the Eastern Realms, wonderfully illustrated, her thank yous were less than enthusiastic. Her own gift to him was a set of 5 linen handkerchiefs. Admittedly, he was forever using up handkerchiefs and ruining many, but the gift didn't seem very romantic. She hadn't even embroidered them.
Perhaps she isn't good at embroidery, Ozorn suggested.
They were in one of many galleys rowing to the Imperial Palace for a midwinter party hosted by his mother, and Aram had mentioned his disappointment. Varys sniffed.
Aram can do better, she said.
Better embroidery? Ozorn asked, startled. Sewing, I'll grant you, but...
Varys tapped him on the shoulder with the sweet-smelling wooden fan Ozorn had given her.
Don't be a dolt, she told him sternly. That shirt doesn't fit you.
I love Prisca, Aram protested.
Do you?
Varys asked as the wind blew a drift of rain under their cover.
Weren't you saying just the other day she hardly seems to listen when you talk to her?
I try to discuss things she likes, Aram said, defending his lady love. And she says you don't know what you're talking about. I know that much, Ozorn said as their boat docked. Forget about her, for tonight anyway. I know Mother will have invited a number of people our age who will take our minds off of everything, not to mention the splendid food and music.
He was right. It was a glorious party. Not only was Princess Mahira smiling, but she also deigned to dance. Twice she accepted Master Chioke's hand, and once she did a solemn weaver's dance with Prince Stillowit, second in line for the throne. The prince might have danced with the princess more, Ozorn confided to Aram, but he chose instead to take 3 dances with Varys. She was blushing heartily when she rejoined her friends after that 3rd dance.
Apparently, it's right what they say about how bawdy seafaring men are, she told them as she fanned herself vigorously. The jokes that man told me, she grinned.
Aram and Varys returned early, near midnight. Ozorn remained to join his mother and the Emperor for other midwinter celebrations. Varys collapsed against their boat's cushions with a sigh of relief and made no attempt to hold a conversation until they were halfway across the river. Instead, they were bundled under a couple of blankets, the rainy night had gotten colder, and listened to the river and droplets on the canopy.
I do love to go to parties with Ozorn, she confided, but I love to return from them with you. Ozorn will talk all the way home. He doesn't understand that sometimes you want to think about the lights and the arrangements and the lace.
Aram, who could feel the fishes coasting lazily under their boat, smiled.
And those little bites of papery bread around pomegranates and seasoned ground lamb with turmeric, just a touch. I'd like to try making that. The bread was the trickiest.
Like phyllo, Aram suggested.
He had never been interested in cooking before meeting her. He loved to help her with ideas, but the few times she had allowed him to assist her with cooking had not gone well, with aftermaths that involved scrubbing, scraping, and, once, repainting the wall of the kitchen they had used.
Phyllo, exactly. only far more fragile. I'll have to experiment.
The boat was drawing up to the dock when she said,
Will I ever have such wonderful friends as you and Ozorn again?
Alarmed, he handed her to the boatman reaching for her from the dock.
Were you planning on getting rid of us?
He asked, scrambling up the ladder after her.
No, no,
she protested, as Aram cast protection from the rain over them both.
But a girl needs more than two friends in a lifetime.
The midnight bells began to chime, signaling the change from midnight to the first hour.
The winter's crone is here,
Varys said, and shivered. Aram pulled the blanket up higher around her shoulders and tucked it in. She leaned against him and sighed.
But she brings good fortune, if we have the courage and stamina to seek it, and she holds the secrets to magic in her hands.
She sat up, excited.
And she must like us, because look at us.
We rise and keep rising,
all three of us with more masters handling our lessons than most who graduate with their certificates ever see. As long as we work hard and please the gods, we'll keep rising.
She settled back against Aram's shoulder.
It's going to be a wonderful year. I can feel it in my bones.
The Imperial University of Karthak. The School for Mages. The Upper Academy. Schedule of Study Spring Term 438 HE. Student, Aram Draper. Learning Level, Independent. Second Morning Bell. Stone Magic, Yadin. Third Morning Bell. Fire Magic. Cosmos. Breakfast. Supplied. Morning Classes. Reptiles. Lindhall Reed. Instructors. Tribal Magic. Arukut. Ahilep. Medicines. Ramasu. Instructors. Lunch. Noon Bell. Afternoon Classes. Advanced Charms. Fazi Ahadi. Illusions. Birds. Dagani. Plants. Hulak. Water Magic, Sibo. Supper, 7th Afternoon Bell, Extra Study at Need. Chapter 11. January 1st to 9th, 438. The day after the end of the midwinter holiday, Ozorn treated his two friends to a boat ride from the university to the port city of Thax Gate, at the end of the Zakoi. The season wasn't ideal for boat rides, but they bore the winter rains for the excitement of visiting the markets, which were open and booming, filled with people from all around the inland sea. They came back exhausted and happy, carrying their purchases under their waterproof cloaks. When Ozorn and Aram reached Master Lindhall's lodgings, they discovered he had planned a surprise for them. One of the fourth-year helpers, a stocky young black woman whose expertise lay with reptiles, encountered them in the hall and snagged Ozorn's arm.
Come and see,
she told him, dragging him into the rooms she shared with two other fourth-year helpers.
You know there's only three of us in these rooms now, since Ba'aro went east to study herds.
Confused, Ozorn nodded. Inside the main lounge, the other two occupants, one male, one female, lazed on broad couches and read. They waved as the woman, Nioka, opened a door. She indicated the room beyond.
We did our best, but doubtless you'll want to shift things around.
Ozorn went inside. Aram followed. Someone had brought Ozorn's things from his cramped quarters to these far bigger ones. He now had shelves, a good-sized bed, a proper desk and chair, and a standing cupboard in addition to his chest. It lacked only a window.
Much better,
the prince said as he dumped his belongings on the bed.
There's no window, Aram pointed out.
Ozorn shrugged.
Who needs a window when you have a scrying mirror?
He asked.
I've gotten very good at finding the lake and woods at Mother's home whenever I want. He led the way into the sitting room the four shared.
"This is wonderful," he told them.
Nioka took Aram's arm.
"Now come, you're dripping."
She towed him across the hall to the room that belonged to Lindahl's personal assistant. He was not there. For that matter, his collection of gaudy drapes and brightly colored bowls was gone as well. Instead, the bed was covered with plain red blankets and pillows, the floor with a brown rug. A desk, fitted with shelves above it, stood beside a tall set of bookshelves already partly stocked. There was a chair and a padded stool big enough to sit on. A table stood by the window. Branches of candles stood on the desk and table. And on a lesser table, tucked into the space between the bed and the door, was Preet's cage. The minute she saw Aram, she began to twitter and sing. Aram looked at Nioka, trembling. He knew what he thought, but he wasn't on the level that Lindahl would require from his assistant.
"I don't understand," he said.
The door next to the desk was already open. Now Lindahl entered.
"My assistant, like several others among my group of students, is off to..."
"Amar District," Nioka told him with a smile. "He forgets details about human beings," she explained to Aram. "Master Lindahl has asked me to take his tasks, but he can't have a woman living in the assistant's quarters with him alone. People will talk. I'll be across the hall. If he shoves in here in the middle of the night, just come and get me." She grinned cheekily at Lindahl, though we did rig a summoning bell, except he seems to have misplaced his end. Lindahl tried to frown at Nioka.
"I'm sure it's in my study somewhere."
Aram looked at them.
"Is it on wire?"
"No, cut and cord,"
Nioka said.
"Better still," Aram told her. "I could probably find wire, but cotton should be easier."
Lindahl raised his eyebrows.
"There are hooks in the hall between our doors. Hang up your cape, silly things. Useful only for shedding water. Hang it up, and you can come try."
It took Aram only a few moments to apply Master Hulak's spell for finding a particular plant. The leading end of the cord had gotten trapped under two fat books on songbirds and a cold teapot in the master's study. With the problem solved, and Nioka chuckling to herself, Aram retreated to his new home. Lindahl followed him.
"I promise not to be in and out," he assured Aram. "But I did want to draw your eyes to this. I had it made over the holiday."
He picked up a piece of cloth from the desk and offered it to Aram, who took it. It was a blue pouch with a long, thick cord attached. The bottom bulged flatly. When Aram put his hand inside, he found a wooden rod was attached to the sides near the bottom, while at the bottom itself was a wooden disc to hold the sides apart. Aram smiled at the tall northerner.
"For Preet?"
Lindahl smiled back.
"You know what she is like if you leave her at night. I now feel free to inform you that if she is left completely alone during the day, she raises a very similar amount of noise."
Stricken with guilt, Aram said,
"Master, I'm sorry."
"Which is why I did not tell you before,"
Lindahl replied, waving off the apology.
"Apparently sunbirds are very sociable. From all I have learned, and you may read that book as a start on what we know of immortals that fly in general."
He pointed to one of Aram's new bookshelves.
"Sunbirds do not strike out on their own. They remain in their original flocks, or when a flock is deemed too large, they separate into smaller ones. To Preet, you are her flock. Other humans, Ozon, Varys, one or two of my students, myself, will do, but, in fact, she wants to be with you. I have sent notices to your teachers and to the cooks that Preet will be with you throughout the day. Unless, of course, Master Sibo takes you underwater.
Preet made an ugly croaking sound. Picking her up to tickle her chest, Aram noticed that she had grown since their first meeting. She now filled his palm and reached the middle knuckles of his hand. Lindhall was chuckling.
She doesn't mind splashing in her water dish, but apparently walking into it is not to her taste.
Aram stroked Preet's head. Don't worry, I won't take you into the river. He looked up at his teacher. I can't thank you. This is so wonderful.
You need not thank me. I have sick rabbits and lizards whose cages must be cleaned,
the master replied.
Whenever you are free, you should check the sick rooms to clean out those areas that need it, and refill such dishes as require it. During the day, gather up old teacups and dishes, and set them on a tray outside my door for the floor's servants to take away. And occasionally, I will require help around here.
Aram could hardly breathe. Work with the sick creatures? Help Master Lindhall? He felt as if he had gone to the divine realms.
At least now that you are here with Preet, you will have a proper bed and you will be able to sleep until dawn,
Lindhall said, clapping him on the shoulder.
Welcome to the menagerie, as my other helpers say. Now, off to supper with you.
Aram hurried to meet his friends, Preet chuckling from inside her new pouch. It was going to be a splendid term. The three friends spent most of their free time during the remainder of the term in Lindhall's domain. Therese worked on medicines at the direction of the older students, who told Lindhall of her precision with the measurements. It may have looked like work, and for Aram and Ozorn it sometimes smelled like work, but they thoroughly enjoyed themselves. Priska sent Aram a couple of notes asking if he wished to accompany her into the city. Once, she stopped by. He was always too busy to go with her. He offered to show her around when she visited, but one look into the room where they had a group of snakes and lizards sent her on her way. Aram would have gone after her, but he had a number of tasks to do. He'd also discovered that Preet didn't care for her. Before the friends knew it, the free week was over. Their spring term schedules arrived the day before classes began. Reviewing his, Aram saw only one change. He was now taking advanced charms with a specific teacher, someone named Fazi Ahadi. It was an old name from Western Karthak. Female, he was pretty sure. Together with the schedule came marks, always a matter of slight discord between him and Ozorn. Aram was unhappy to find more sixes and sevens for the last term, but not surprised. Diop had worn on him, and the arrival of Preet had distracted him in December. He would just have to buckle down this term. Over breakfast, Ozorn noticed that he had a mark lower than Aram's, though he ranked higher, as usual, in illusions. His marks for war magic were also high. He joked about it being good that he knew Aram was cleverer than he was, but his eyes sent a different message. Aram shrugged. Ozorn would feel better in a week or so. He left his friends early so he could perform his day's chores for Lindhall and get a good night's sleep. Unlike them, he still had Yadin's class and the one with Cosmas before the school day began. He wished Ozorn studied with Cosmas as well. But Ozorn now took fire magic later in the day with Chioke. With the new term, they had some new workrooms in which to meet with instructors. These were separate buildings on the western side of the school for mages, beside the service road used by tradesmen to bring goods to the mages and kitchens. All three of the friends had been excited about this the day before. They had to be moving ahead if they were to be admitted to the rooms where the mages did their deepest spell work. Aram's first experience in one, naturally, was with Yadin.
He wasn't sure what he expected, but the long, bright place with windows set near the ceiling was not it. The tables and counters were polished light-colored wood, as were the tall stools. Stones were arrayed in tidy square boxes on shelves 6 and 7 layers high on both sides of the room. Cabinets supported the counters. Braziers stood in each corner, supplying warmth. The morning was cold. One also supported a teapot. Aram produced Preet for Yadin to look at. But if Preet intrigued him, he showed no sign of it. He simply ordered Aram to place her near a working brazier so he could juggle unencumbered. Aram was all thumbs when Yadin tossed him a piece of amethyst in place of a fourth ball, but it seemed that at least one irregular object in the circle was the rule for the first half hour. For the second half, Yadin introduced him to the art of magically breaking a crystal the size of his fist into many tinier crystals, or at least attempting to do so. Aram reached the end of the hour sweaty, without removing so much as a speck of crystal with his gift. Even worse, he could have sworn he heard Preet make a rude noise when he stopped. He was wistfully dreaming of life as a peddler or beekeeper. His wrists were so tired that they ached. "I don't understand," he complained to Yadin when they ended. "It seemed easy enough when we split the chunks of marble into straight-sided pieces." Yadin raised a heavy brow. "I believe I was the mage in charge," he reminded Aram gently. Blushing, Aram gathered up his belongings and Preet, then thanked Yadin and left the workroom. At least Cosmas's workroom was next door. The breakfast that waited there helped. While Varys and Aram used pancakes with pistachios to scoop up eggs, Cosmas fed Preet whatever she expressed a wish for in between sips of tea. When the two young people sighed with content, the master told Preet,
"Try the seeming of a blackbird fledgling from here on. It will match your size better."
To Aram he said,
"Even the young creatures of the divine realms are more intelligent than our adult animals. How did you come by her?"
Aram didn't want to lie to this man who had been so good to him. Miserably, he replied, "I really can't say, Master Cosmas." The master looked him over and then patted his shoulder.
"Never mind. I hope you'll be able to tell me eventually."
Preet voiced a soft musical note that spiraled into the air. Her blend of light and dark gray feathers shifted to speckled brown on her belly. Aram and Varys gawped at her.
"I thought she might possess her own magic. Now she is palm-sized and matches her feathers."
Cosmas rubbed his hands.
"Where did we stop? Drawing heat from the air itself. Varys, let me see you try."
Cosmas lit a candle.
"Give it a go."
Aram's next class was with Lindhall himself. Other students were also present, including Varys and Ozorn. The prince waved to Aram and yawned. Morning was not his best time. Aram settled at a corner desk. This room was a regular classroom, and propped the bird's pouch on his lap. Lindhall turned away and began to write on the immense slate board on one side of the room.
"We shall spend this term in the examination of how reptiles give birth and raise their young. Also, of how parts of reptiles, skins taken when they are shed, eggshells left behind, bones once they are deceased, may be put in magic. We will have no capture or killing of wild reptiles under my auspices. Understand?"
Aram grinned with excitement. This was exciting. Varys opened her notebook and readied her quill, while Ozorn sat up. Preet perched on Aram's shoulder, tucked against his neck. Once there, she fluffed her feathers and did not move again for the length of the class. Since Aram was in a corner, no one noticed her until it came time to go.
"Aram minds her for me,"
Lindhall called over the students' exclamations.
"She is not a pet. Do you really wish to be late to your next classes?
Ozorn and Aram trotted toward their class on tribal magic.
You should have something more exciting for her than that dull old bag, he told Aram. Something with more padding if you're going to bump her around like that. Varys would sew something if you asked her nicely. Or Prisca.
Aram made a face.
I don't know about Prisca. She was having supper with some fellow from the School of Law last night. Didn't you see? Perhaps she's trying to make you jealous, Ozorn suggested. You pretty well ignored her over the break.
I told her I was working for Master Lindhall. She has to understand how things are. And I don't like it when people play games like making other people jealous.
Aram kicked at one of the rocks lining the path and hurt his toe. Preet ran her beak over his ear. Was she consoling him?
Ozorn held up a hand, panting.
Stop. I have to catch my breath. I can't walk in all sweaty and gasping. I still think Prisca is trying to give you a hint.
Aram looked down. I think so, too. Just not the I'm making you jealous so you'll pay more attention to me sort of hint.
Ozorn patted him on the shoulder unoccupied by a bird.
Too bad. But cheer up. There are other girls. Let's go to class.
Master Urukut, in tribal magic, only glanced at Preet.
That would be the bird you are minding for Lindhall? The appellate mage inquired. I will not allow it to distract the class.
He waved off Aram's explanation that Preet would do no such thing, and pointed for them to take their seats. Since Preet was napping, the master took no more interest in her, nor did anyone else. Aram sighed quietly with relief. The last class of the morning was held in Master Ramasu's large workroom, where Aram was the only student. When the big, broad-shouldered man looked him over, Aram felt compelled to produce Preet. Seeing her, the university's chief healer raised an eyebrow.
Sir, this is Preet? Aram said, though it came out more as a question. I think Master Lindhall mentioned I was caring for her.
He knew he sounded like a very junior student, but he couldn't help it. Ramasu, the cloud-handed, was the greatest healer south of the Inland Sea. Aram knew how privileged he was to be learning from the man, and how amazing it was for him to be the only student in the room at the moment. Ramasu inspected first the bird, and then Aram with eyes that were a strange mix of gray and brown. At last he said,
"That little bird will get you into more trouble than you can handle, boy."
Aram scuffed his foot on the floor. "Everyone knows I'm just minding her for lessons, sir, and a friend. Master Lindhall thought that since she's in my care, I should do a study of her."
He was talking too much, so he clamped his teeth together hard.
"Indeed."
The master did not sound convinced.
"Do you know how long she is to be in your care?"
Aram tucked Preet back into her pouch. The friend wasn't precise. Ramasu turned to the big slate hung on one of the narrow sides of the room and picked up the chalk.
"Do you know why he was not precise?"
"He said there might be difficulties," Aram replied, looking over the mage's shoulder. Ramasu wrote in large, sharp letters, "Sunbird?" Aram gulped.
"Yes, sir, I know," he shrugged. "What can I do when someone vastly important asks for so small a favor?"
Reaching into the pouch, he petted the bird's soft head with a finger.
"She's no trouble, though I might catch some one day if I'm cornered by somebody who won't wait for an explanation. Somebody truly great. Outside the university, so to speak."
"Demand a hearing before Minos," Ramasu told him. "Such a request must be honored by all gods. Once you are before the great judge, tell the truth. Bad things happen to those who lie to him. You'll be fine once Minos hears you.
Aram eyed the master. You say that as if you didn't exactly learn it from a book. Ramasu looked down with a smile.
I have not always been the sober fellow who teaches herbs and simples. Now, when was your blackbird last fed?
Preet was nibbling on Aram's finger. Hurriedly, he dug into an outer pouch of his work bag and brought out a wheat roll. Preet clambered up the arm, still in her pouch. As soon as she had a grip on Aram's wrist, she strained toward the shelf that lay along one long wall beneath windows of real glass. Among the healer's tools placed there was a plate of figs and olives.
She seems to have indicated a preference,
Ramasu said.
Since she is not a two-bird, whatever her camouflage signifies, we must trust that she knows what is good for her. Set the food and the bird on the floor, in that corner, if you will.
Aram obeyed.
Now,
the master said, indicating one of two walls of shelves full of jars and bottles.
My assistants have worked with you, but I have not. What I have heard is interesting. So I have arranged this examination. You see, I have turned these containers to conceal the labels. Use your gift to identify common herbs and healers' potions and describe their uses. That short ladder by the door will let you reach the top shelf. Begin where you please.
Aram looked at the shelves and at his shaking hands. After all, he had heard of this man. He did not want to make a fool of himself. He took off his robe, folded it, and set it where he wouldn't trip over it, along with his work bag. Ramasu took a seat on a tall stool near Preet. Aram placed the ladder at one end of the shelves and stepped to the top. Drawing a deep breath, he let it go, summoned a cord of his gift into his fingers, and touched the first jar there. The moment his power began to flow through his hand, his brain cooled and his body settled.
"Aloe in balm form," he said,
"for burns and scrapes. It can also be used raw for insect bites and burns." He touched the next container. "Anemone, sedation, dysentery, and fevers. Users must be wary of getting it on the skin. It can blister." Another jar. "Angelica. For women, if they have trouble with monthly bleeding, to strengthen a body recovering from disease, to steady an irregular heart." On he went, skipping those he did not know. He finished more than 100 jars before the bell rang for lunch.
"Very good,"
Ramasu said, as Aram shoved his hair back from his face. He'd gotten very excited about naming the jar's contents and what they did.
"I am impressed," the healer admitted. "You know more than most second-year healing students. Now, tomorrow I must go to one of the city's infirmaries. You shall go with me. I am in and out, so my students will continue to teach some of your lessons. You and I shall muddle along, however. Anatomy next. Have you studied musculature? Veins?"
Aram shook his head to both. "Only skeletons, sir." Ramasu picked up a book from a nearby shelf.
"Read 2 chapters for Tuesday, when you and I will be back here. We will begin with veins. As for your friend..."
Somehow, during the last 2 hours, Preet had migrated to his lap. Ramasu handed her to Aram.
"You may have her back. Off with you both. A promising start, Aram."
He didn't think he'd breathe again after a welcome like that, but somehow he made it to the dining hall. Ozorn waited for him at the door.
I see from your face it went well and the great man didn't crush you, he said, clapping Aram on the shoulder. Very good. We thought we'd eat outside since it's not so bad and not so cold. Faris is holding a table, and I'm getting her lunch as well as mine. How is your friend?
On my other shoulder, Aram said as they went in and grabbed trays and utensils. She charmed Master Ramasu. He turned so Ozorn could see Preet.
She's a charming girl,
Ozorn said cheerfully. Once they had their meals, they went outside to join Varys. Swiftly, she cleared her bag and Ozorn's from the table. Where were you? She demanded. I had to fight off three parties of idiots, as if this was the only spot.
We came as fast as we could, Aram said.
He lifted Preet from his shoulder and offered her to Varys.
Let Preet soothe you.
Preet was talking softly to Varys when a stocky young man asked,
May we sit here?
He and a slightly taller young woman had approached them, trays in their hands. He was a northerner with the remains of a gold tan, hazel eyes, and golden brown hair. Under his white Upper Academy first-year robe, he wore a green tunic and browned breeches. Faris dimpled when he smiled warmly at her. Aram and Ozorn, who had just begun eating, exchanged frowns. They were always a bit mistrustful of anyone who set out to charm Faris right away. His companion was a dark brown-skinned woman from one of the middle districts of the Empire. She had black eyes, slightly pockmarked cheeks, and coarse black hair. She wore it braided and fixed in coils with enameled pins. Under her own first-year robe, she wore a maroon tunic and thin yellow leggings, both made of wool. She looked them over.
He is Tristan Denain, she said.
I am Gisa Rakhni.
Have pity,
Tristan said, still smiling at Varys.
I think yours is the only table where everyone isn't complaining of how miserable they are to return to class. Those who aren't complaining, they still look decidedly unpleasant. Except your group, you seem pleasant.
They'll still look unpleasant if you sit with us,
Ozorn told Gisa.
We're not the most popular students here.
We'll take our chances, she said with a wry smile. These trays are heavy. Sensing that his friends meant to agree, Aram moved closer to Varys so Gisa could fit between him and Ozorn. Varys made room for Tristan as Preet hopped back to Aram.
Does anyone else have a pet?
Tristan asked.
I haven't seen any.
She's not a pet, Aram said, holding Preet against his chest and running a finger down her back.
Aram minds her for one of our masters. He isn't exactly an everyday student, so don't take him for an example,
Ozorn cautioned.
He's got single teachers for nearly all of his courses.
Tristan raised his eyebrows.
My congratulations.
You wouldn't say that if you could see his schedule, Varys said, spooning up mouthfuls of chickpea soup. Pausing, she asked, Tristan, you're from the north, yes?
Marin,
Tristan replied.
Gisa is from the Amar district here. I've been one of her father's students for the last 2 years, until he said we'd both do better here.
Welcome,
Ozorn said.
We've introduced Aram, and his blackbird fledgling is Preet. He's from Tira originally. Aram, that is.
He offered Preet a piece of bean, which she ate. He went on.
I'm Ozorn. I'm Karthaki. She's Varys, from Tuzaine originally.
Gisa nodded at Varys.
What classes do you take?
She asked.
Have you got that scary fellow Chioke for the introductions to the university and the city?
Oh, goodness, no, Varys replied. We've been here for years. We know the university and the capital. Ozorn even knows the palace pretty well.
If you like, we can take you around, Ozorn offered. Chioke isn't bad, but he doesn't know the useful places. We can show you ones that don't charge too much. The introductory tours are well enough, but they tend to rush things a bit.
Thank you. We appreciate that, Tristan said.
Ozorn, I don't know if I can help, Aram reminded him quietly. I have all that extra work.
Why extra? Are they punishing you for something? Gisa inquired. She smiled crookedly at Aram.
Actually, they are...
He's clever, Ozorn said.
That is an affliction, Tristan remarked with a smile for Aram. But I think we'll take our chances with you, eh, Gisa?
Of course. You aren't as loud as those others. Gisa nodded toward the main dining hall. I came from a small village.
Aram understood that with his love of libraries.
There are quiet areas, he said as his friends nodded.
And it gets better as the term goes on, Varys added. People will have work to do. They won't be lively enough to carry on like this.
Preet chose that moment to give voice to a soft, enchanting trill of song that made even Gisa melt and Tristan grin. When the bell to prepare for class chimed, they all sighed and reluctantly gathered their things. As Aram and Ozorn waited for the young women and Tristan to emerge from the washrooms after lunch, Ozorn nudged his friend.
Tristan and Gisa seem all right, don't they?
Aram looked at him. Ozorn missed having more than two friends, that was clear.
They're all right for now. We'll have to see. Our luck has to turn sometime, Ozorn said.
To the returning girls and Tristan, he said,
I have truth reading now. So does Varys.
I have it, Gisa said, reviewing the schedule on a parchment in her bag.
As do I,
Tristan announced.
Aram shrugged.
Charms.
Fazi Ahadi? I don't recognize her name. Poor Aram.
Ozorn looked at Tristan's schedule.
The rest of us are all in the same room. Well, there's luck.
So it is,
Tristan said. He offered an arm to each young woman.
Let us go immerse ourselves in the truth.
Ozorn followed them, smiling. Aram looked down into the pouch. Preet had tucked her head under her wing and was snoozing.
I suppose it's just us then, he murmured, and set off for class.
Fazi Ahadi had a workroom near those used by Yadin, Cosmas, and Ramasu. He had to run to get there. He was late even so, and drenched by the rain that had begun to fall while he used outdoor shortcuts. The woman who greeted him at the door was just his height at 5'10", strong-bodied with bronze-brown skin. Her wide white smile over a full lower lip dazzled him. She had a short, broad nose, dimples, and sparkling black eyes with long lashes. Her splendid black hair was wrapped in coils and secured with braids and gold hairpins in the shapes of tiny monkeys. She wore a blue wool dress under a yellow adept's robe, which startled him. He expected her to be a red-robed master.
You are surely Aram, she said, urging him inside. Isn't the weather vile?
I had lunch with Lindhall Reed. His description of you was very good.
But I was told you have a bird in your care.
Oh, Preet. Aram had kept her under his arm and robe out of the weather. He fished the little bird out of the pouch as she grumbled. Carefully, he showed Fazi his new friend.
But how adorable, she exclaimed,
holding out a hand for Preet to examine.
A blackbird fledgling?
We believe so. Master?
Aram wasn't sure what to call her. The woman laughed as Preet walked onto her palm and up her arm.
Fazi will do. Technically, I have taken all the charms classes to be granted a mastery, but I had to take leave of the university for a time before I could complete my credential. It was decided I can teach charms to the upper and lower academies while I finish my mastery. She saw Aram's eyes go to the items on the shelves and the walls. Go ahead. Look around. He did so, listening to the sounds she exchanged with Preet. The teacher knew a number of bird calls, trying them out when the youngster didn't respond to blackbird sounds. He thought briefly that they should have realized this might be a problem, but he forgot about that in his fascination with the things on the wall shelves. They ranged from small metal, stone, and straw charms to necklaces, bracelets, dolls, braided or knotted strings, hand-sized mirrors, and wax or clay figures. There were also several pieces like branches or sticks, thickly coated in sand. One of them formed the shape of an O. He stretched his hand out over a slender shape. His hand tingled, and the hairs on the back of his fingers and wrist stood on end. Mages of long ago called them fulgurite, Faizi said over his shoulder. Aram flinched. He didn't even know the teacher had come up to him. They are what happens when lightning strikes sand. Well, very strong lightning. Beneath the surface, it goes solid. We only know this when the sand on top washes off or is blown away. She rested a hand on his shoulder. Go on. Pick it up. It was fused a long time ago. It won't hurt you. Aram gently wrapped his hand around a branch of it. He feared it would crumble to pieces, but it was as hard as stone. The tiny prickles raced up his arm again. There's lightning still in it, he exclaimed, letting go. She chuckled, a lovely low sound in his ear. That's your imagination, my lad. The lightning was gone from these pieces centuries ago, ages ago. You've been to the museum? Aram nodded. You've seen the skeletons of the giant lizards and birds, the huge elephants. It's all from that time. Aram opened his mouth to argue and closed it. Whether she had finished her classes to be a master or no, she was close to being one. It was not his place to argue. He did ask, why is that round one so different? The others just look like sticks. Faizi laughed. Oh, that. I made that one. Aram gawped at her. Even Preet squeaked. Faizi looked down her nose at the little bird. You're not even supposed to be able to make sounds like that. She looked at Aram. I didn't say it was easy. You said it requires lightning. Now it was time for him to squeak. She smiled. And it does. I am lucky enough that the lightning snakes find me amusing. When they're about, sometimes I can coax them to help me do things. But it took years of practice and knowledge and study. Half of the time it doesn't work because they're willful creatures. She flicked the bird on the beak with a finger. Most of the mages who try it incinerate themselves. Aram only grasped one idea out of all that she said. Lightning snakes? Faizi sighed and settled into one of the chairs at the room's big table. She motioned for Aram to sit in another. Among the tribes, it is known that there is magic in far more things than the school mages believe, she told him. Well, lightning snakes ride with lightning in the season of storms. Some think they are the lords of lightning and give them names. Some think they are simply creatures like the immortals of old, the centaurs and stormwings. I think they are more like gods. If there's a big storm when we have class, I'll try to show you some. Now where did you end when you took charms the last time? Aram left the class dazed and filled with wonder. never mind that he had made a botch of a twisted straw and wire charm for good crops. The thought of snakes made of lightning enchanted him. He couldn't wait to see one.